Hello and welcome to the TOVG podcast. My name is George Weedman, and here this week we have returning after a very long hiatus, Gerard the Completionist.
I guess it's correct. It's I should show up on the podcast that's named after my channel. Yeah.
which is like fine. We've come into our own here at the TOVG podcast. We are Jimmy Belikoff and Matt Visual as always. And sometimes we have others in on the fourth. This week it happens to be the person responsible for this whole mess. By the way, it's nice recording on this fancy new microphone you sent me.
Yeah, man, no problem. Glad to help out.
I did some research on this Shure SM7B that for listeners, I gotta fill you in. Gerard and Alex and the folks sent me a fancy new super high quality microphone. As it turns out, Michael Jackson recorded Thriller on this model of microphone.
That's specifically why we got those mics, because that's too good.
That's how legit it is. I have like this giant contraption thing in front of me. It's the PSO1 studio arm hooked up to the Shure SM7B and the Mackie Onyx Blackjack. I am looking at something that looks like it was from Mega Man.
Yeah, it's great.
It's great.
I've been recording on ones because I use the office microphone. Gerard is definitely on one right now. Matt Visual needs to fucking get with the times.
I'm totally fine with my RE20. Okay,
I'm just kidding. That it's actually funny because you're the only person that I've never had to master audio for the podcast.
Really?
It's always like, yeah.
I've always not been good enough.
Your audio is like, it's not bad. You just have a hiss and background noise.
Oh,
all over
thanks.
It.
Thanks, Jimmy.
I've seen the track. I've seen the track, okay? I was there, and every time you move or you make water noises with your mouth, it comes up on the track. I'm like, okay. I'm just there to make more noise, basically.
That reminds
when I'm
me.
There.
I've got messages, and you said you did too, from fans who are like, George really needs to quit sloshing
yes.
his bucket of ice in the microphone.
I got personal emails from that. He's like, dude, I really like your podcast, but TOVG, like, someone needs to stop. Someone needs to stop, like, molesting ice in their mouth. And I'm like, I can't stop it. I'm sorry.
It's my bad. And for the past 3 weeks, I decided to shove the mega Slurpee under my bed for the hour it takes to record
big
this.
Ice gulp. Yeah,
yeah,
from 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Right.
The 7-Eleven mega gulp.
I edit the podcast and I have never heard anything.
I'm glad you guys have filled me in what I've missed. What may be about a year of podcast life.
Right.
Yeah, no, see,
pretty much all we've established is that one of us drinks too loudly on the podcast, and that's about it. That's like our canon.
You leave for a year and come back, and this is the mess we've left you with.
Pick up the pieces.
It's a good mess. I like this mess. It's familiar.
If anything, the one thing we've established on the podcast is that George always starts with "Hello and welcome,",
welcome.
And that's pretty much all we've got going for us over here.
Well, no, I mean, since the past year, I mean, we've got this document thing like down to a T, a very thorough outline every week shared between all of us on Google Docs. Look, I got all my the games, the small talks. Jimmy's got a lot of Fez here, it looks like.
I mean, exactly one Fez, but
no, there's Fez, there's fucking Fez.
I mean,
it's
like
Fez.
Just one topic.
Well, okay, yeah. I guess you sound like you care
should
about
we,
Fez.
Should we jump into the video games?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's the idea, though, right?
You're right. Okay, I'll just go first real quick because I'm playing Fez again because I never 100%ed it. I got very close. I got
200%ed it.
Well,
mean?
Yeah, it's not 100. It's more, but but yeah, I finished a puzzle that had me stumped for over a year. Like in the point where like I did it for a month, gave up, and then like waited
you
until
never looked
now.
It up.
No,
you resisted
no, hell no.
That for a whole year. That's kind of
hell no.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, I refuse to look up anything in puzzle games. That's the only, I mean, that just makes them worth playing, in my opinion, is figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did that with Braid, Antichamber, The Swapper, Fez, everything. I love puzzle games, like, blind like that. That's the best experience, in my opinion. But, yeah, I finally beat the boiler room, which I think I'm the only person who got stuck on the boiler room.
That was a doozy.
That and the bell tower, pretty much anything that has to do with the numbers. Because there's like letters and numbers in the game, so I finally uncoded the numbers cube, and I feel like, well, you should see my room right now. I have a whiteboard with just like theories scrawled all over it, and papers strewn across with like hastily scrawled notes where it's like, does it work like this? Grid? Just like singular words with question marks after them as like a passing thought. And then I have three more things to do, and then the game is truly done.
Wow. Well, what three things are they? Because there's one puzzle that I don't think fans ever legitimately solved. Like, it's the black monolith. They ended up brute forcing it. It took them like 2 weeks, but they did it.
That's one of the ones that I still have, is the monolith.
Don't get your hopes up, friend.
Yeah, no, it's probably gonna be my last one. Oddly enough, okay, there's two secrets inside of the telescope room. I got the harder one, and I can't figure out the straightforward one.
The music in the telescope room, though,
right? It's so good,
rad. It is
so good.
You have stumbled upon a mystery your mind cannot even begin to comprehend. Music.
If I'm correct, I think that song is actually called Puzzle in
That's
the soundtrack.
Perfect.
Yeah. Also, the last one that I have is the security question room, which that's just fucking... Do you remember that one?
I'm trying to... I don't think that... Because
okay,
looking the solutions up because I wanted to do a video about it, and I didn't want to come into the video with only like three puzzles solved.
Right.
So like the ones that might have taken fans a longer time to do it naturally, but might end up taking less time to do it artificially, are probably the ones I don't remember as well.
Yeah, essentially, there's a block hovering in the middle of the room,
mm-hmm.
and it has a hint written in the other language on it, and you have to decipher the hint, and then there's eight letter blocks on the floor, and you have to uncover the password through those, and so...
So, the barrier for this game is pretty high, is what you're saying. Is this the 100... the 100%, or this is like, oh, you can't even complete the game until you, like, solve these puzzles, and it's really hard?
There's one game, and then there's New Game Plus. And I actually like it. The barrier of entry for Fez is actually really low, because 32 of the 64 cubes in the game that you can get are just regular hypercubes, and those are pretty much all platforming stuff. And so it's like, you know, collecting little yellow cubes that make a bigger one. And it's all about like jumping around and like making use of the mechanics. And that's like fun. And that's the part that everyone's like, Fez is just spinning until it lines up. And it's like, no.
I mean, I'm guilty as charged. Like, I will say I liked the New Game Plus a lot. I don't know if I liked the first go round so much.
I mean, it's like, it's just sort of a thing to lead you through exploring the world.
Right.
Because it's like, oh, there's little cube bits, so I'll follow them over here. And then like, why do I... Oh, you can get over there. It's like a lot of those kind of moments.
Mm-hmm.
But the other 32 cubes are the like the mindfuck puzzles. Like some of them are not mindfucky, but there's one room you get to after you start New Game Plus that you couldn't get to before. And it unveils something that like, it's this like... Dear God, the puzzles have been everywhere all along. It's so good. Yeah. I fucking love it.
And it's actually really, I had a lot of fun getting into it. I ended up making little papercraft cubes.
I have as well.
Yes, yes. And no other game really like managed to get me that far where I was like having the game bleed out into real life like that.
This is the first and only game that I've taken physical notes on ever. And I really feel like I needed
it.
Like,
I
did not need it. Huh?
Not even Braid.
I didn't need it in Braid.
You had to do it a lot back in the Nintendo days.
Right.
But then once devs started having the memory to put like tutorial levels in their games, like that whole thing just stopped like almost in a year.
Yeah.
And it came back when Fez came out.
Right. But yeah, so we'll update if I managed to beat that in the next month. But
this is kind of a tangent, but I do want to mention like that problem of me not liking like the regular game, but liking the new game plus is a really weird problem that I don't know how to really like respectively or properly talk about or review. Because I came into that issue with two games I recently reviewed, Symphony of the Night and The Witcher 2. And the thing is, with The Witcher 2 especially, like, it's a really great story when you look at the whole thing on a whiteboard. But when you play through one little sliver of it, one little branch, you're only seeing so much that I don't know if it really captures the whole experience of what makes the game good.
It really doesn't. Once you go the elf way, like, it you get a totally different story and you miss on so much.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, not the elf way, sorry, the roach way, sorry.
Well, you either can go with the elf or the non-elf.
Right. The non-elf is vastly. And it blew my mind when I saw, like, who the dragon was and stuff like that. People who've played it would know. It's just like, okay, you never know that going to the roach side of the story.
I don't know if this is a problem or not. There are twists that don't make sense until you play both branches.
Right.
And, like, that is a super cool thing. But at the same time, that means when you play one branch, you're getting an awfully incomplete piece of what is a good picture.
Yeah.
So it's like a double-edged sword.
It's interesting, yeah. I mean, I feel like it's different in the case of Fez, just because, like, I think the first half of the game, the first run through the game, is just supposed to be, like, learn what all the worlds look like, learn how to use your mechanics and how they get, like, a little bit deeper. And that prepares you for, like, the obtuse shit that happens in the second half.
It's a little lengthy for a tutorial, though. Like, I just kind of got tired of spinning after so many hours. I wanted to solve some puzzles, but the game never really gave me those challenges until the new game plus.
Man, I don't know. I was just, like, soaking in the world. I think it's a great atmospheric game, so I just liked walking around and seeing the little turtles spinning by me and the little birds flying around.
Yeah. Which I mean, like, isn't wrong. Like, it's just such a weird, like, I don't even know if it is a problem. It's just like a weird personal quirk.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Well, so Gerard, what have you been up to? You've been awfully silent up there. I'm wondering if you're scheming something.
No, I've just been in the world of Mario Maker.
God! Did you get a press copy?
I did get a press copy
you
of Mario Maker.
Bastard! I'm trying so hard to suppress my jelly.
Yeah,
trying not to seep it out of the edges.
Not to make you more jelly, but it's about three rooms over from where I currently am. So
all right, let's hear it. How amazing is this thing?
It's pretty great. There's a few things that, as an extreme Mario enthusiast, I'm pretty bummed about, but overall, those things are so stupid and small that the game is, it doesn't matter. The game is great.
Can you talk about it? Like, one weird thing I'm seeing these days, like, Mario Maker is all over the news right now, and it's just under a month from launch. Like, they're being super lenient about the embargo. Like, people have already made videos of really weird stuff, and, like, people you wouldn't expect. Like, right now, there's a really popular video on a channel I have never heard of called Pixel Cabinet. I mean, maybe this is a person who works for a bigger outlet. It's a German-speaking YouTube channel, I think. But it's like, yesterday Kotaku had a feature about the title menu. There were people streaming it. It seems like they're really, really confident about this one. They're not doing any shady press shenanigans this time.
Yeah, so overall, I mean, usually with Nintendo products that I've received, ever since I've partnered with Nintendo way back in 2012, when the Wii U, when the Wii U debuted? Yeah, I was one of the first Nintendo influencers that received a Wii U and new Mario Bros. U, and I've always just been proud to work with Nintendo. It's an honor to work with them. It's always been a pleasure, and I know that they get a lot of flack for their copyright stuff, and everyone does, but that's like America versus Japan with regard to that. The Nintendo of America have been nothing but great to YouTubers. And with Mario Maker specifically, they've been pretty lenient. The embargo stuff is pretty straightforward. Most of it's just a matter of, oh, this is a thing that they want to be kept as a surprise, and not so much as a, oh, well, it ruins the entity of the game if you know that it's there. I've actually seen, I created a level called Amiibo Costume Party. And since I own every Amiibo commercially available in the U.S., I made a level that shows off all their costumes. And the embargo says that we can't show off a lot of those costumes. So I just made a level to my own, being like, hey, you know, I'm sure some press coverage out there is going to release a video eventually past embargo and show that. So I made it. And then the day after everyone got the Mario Maker stuff, someone posted a video with my level that showed off all the Amiibo.
And it wasn't you.
And it wasn't me. So technically speaking, I didn't break embargo because I didn't post any coverage.
They did.
I was the content creator who made it.
That's so weird.
Yeah. I was at dinner with Davis from the Warp Zone, and my Twitter blew up, and I immediately was like, am I going to get in trouble? I don't want to. This is the one relationship with the company that I care
Nintendo
about.
The Nintendo detectives are going to track you down.
My uncle's going to call me. He's going to be like, what did you do?
Do you have an uncle who works at Nintendo who let you play the latest Mario Maker?
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know that Gerard told me that his uncle said that they're going to make an Xbox that's also Nintendo.
I'm convinced.
I take a photo of it, but then my uncle would get mad at me.
Yeah.
So okay, back to like real things that really exist. Okay, the thing that I'm weirdly most excited about is just having a pack of new Mario levels. Are they good levels?
Yes. So
excellent.
Yes, they are great. I think overall, there's created by actual Nintendo employees about 75 to 80 levels.
Wow.
Are they? And how long are we talking? How many minutes?
A few of them are really short. But they're like, there's a mechanic you have to learn or something you have to do to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
Others are really long-winded and fun for the most part. A lot of them are themed, and the title will tell you exactly like what to do in the level, which is exciting because you get in there sometimes and you're like, oh damn, I don't know what to do. There's a lot of cool remix levels that have been brought back from classic Mario games in the world of Mario Maker, which is cool because they call them remixes. So there's different enemies and power-ups that shouldn't have been there that are now there to kind of give those levels a little more extra original edge, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, overall, the Nintendo created levels are really awesome. And according to embargo, I can't say what happens if you get that far into the game, but you do get something pretty cool if you conquer the Nintendo created levels. So it's exciting.
Ooh.
So this I really enjoy hearing that because it's just like so much of what I'd want out of this game. Like I am more excited for this than I have been for a legit Mario game in a long while. Which is funny because
it looks super solid.
It's also not like it doesn't have new in the name, which is like a petty complaint, but I mean, the thing is, I've always thought Mario levels were best, and a lot of the fan projects and ROM hacks emphasize this, but when they're like playful, when they don't really have to submit to a game-wide theme, when they could just do like something stupid 70 times, mm-hmm. I really, really enjoy a lot of fan games that aren't necessarily bound by the thematic consistency that a new Super Mario Brothers U would have, where they have to have half the game built around a new gimmicky penguin suit they made for him. They can just go like straight back to what makes Mario levels fun, while at the same time not necessarily even being limited by what they were limited to with back then.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, definitely. Mm-hmm. And after playing a little bit myself of Mario Maker here, it's pretty cool seeing, like, I've been able to see other people's levels that have sucked, like, but I've also been able to see,
Jimmy,
like,
the critic.
No, I mean, like, seriously, I've seen some that were just like, wow, this is really bad. Like, this is like your first level where you just like grab the like blocks, yeah, and you just like scribble all over the screen, and now blocks are everywhere, and then you start like pipes and shoot coins, yeah, and you scribble those all over.
You could
and
make
so it just
a
like,
level head video about all the shittiest Mario.
Actually, holy shit, there are ideas here for videos that would fit so well on your channel.
Unlimited George. Content,
yeah. George.
Yeah.
George, please. As if.
As if you,
as if that series already doesn't exist.
I can't. I know it's not an original thought, but I still got excited about it.
I know. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. My gameplay channel, I'm going to do something with Mario Maker.
I have to say, my favorite level that I've played by a user, and told Jimmy about this, but the level was called My Girlfriend Just Broke Up With Me and Now I'm Alone in My Room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a Mario Maker. It's Mario Bros. Wii U Underground with absolutely nothing in it. There's not one asset in the game, in that level, but the fact that it's My Girlfriend Just Broke Up With Me and Now I'm In My Room is the name of the level. I walked into it and I was like, nothing happens, and by the time I got the flagpole, I just couldn't help but laugh.
You have entered the meta game.
Yeah. I was saying it's like an art project. People are going to be doing like interpretive Mario levels now.
This is so brilliant. I'm going to try to request a review copy. I hope I can get my registration through, because I've never really cared that much about getting Nintendo review copies until this one. But this is what I'm really looking forward to.
I just want the game.
I will buy it if I don't get a review copy.
I'll take it 2 days after release. Just send to Nintendo. Right. Hey, Nintendo. It's your pal Jimmy.
I was at a GameStop for the first time in several years the other day, and I was looking for Mario Maker. I looked up the release date, made sure it wasn't out, and I would have bought it if it was there, because this is something I want.
Yeah, what I was saying, though, before I tangented on to bad levels, is there was I've also seen like a couple really interesting levels that people have made that are very like reminiscent of ROM hack stuff, where it's like you play it a few times and you die a few times and you're like, what's going on here? And then you like figure it out and you're like, oh, I see. Mm-hmm. And like it's actually some cool design going on. And so I guess I was kind of just assuming that it was gonna be a lot of the spammy like draw shit everywhere and that's the level thing, but in just the press copy, I've seen like a bunch of cool levels already, and so I'm excited to see what, like, when the global level sharing launches and people start like getting upvoted and downvoted based on how good their level is and stuff, I'm excited to see like the best of the best levels, or if there's like level packs or whatever. That's
gonna
be cool.
Yes, level packs would be fun.
This is kind of the thing I liked about Little Big Planet back when that first came out. And I was like, oh, I loved playing the levels and seeing the creative stuff. But this is like on a different level,
Mario
I feel.
Mario Maker probably will have actually good jumping.
Yeah.
just
everything
just
being solid.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about the game that I've kind of fell back in love with Mario games is that every game... So while you're editing on the gamepad, you can switch between what style of game it is, whether it's Mario 1, Mario 3, Mario U, or Mario World. And all the physics and mechanics of those Mario games have changed drastically over the years. So when you play those levels, you have to remember every time, okay, I'm now playing Mario 3. The mechanics in this world are different. I can hold shells, I can aim them, I can fly with the leaf and the P meter. You know, versus Mario World, where it's like, okay, I can now spin jump, I can toss shells specifically up in the air, I can ride Yoshi, I can eat things. So it's really fun to kind of start playing a level and go, okay, yeah, the jump mechanics are different, the enemy mechanics are different. It really makes you think as you're building your level, how do the physics of this world, or level rather, exist for me as the designer? And it's really fascinating to kind of like have that edge when you're creating a level.
Do they have new mechanics that don't exist in Mario games, or are they all like true to the Mario canon?
There's new mechanics for sure.
There
definitely is, dude. The like you could turn bullet bills into bullseye bills.
Yeah.
So they follow you like heat seek, even in like the old Marios where they could, like, didn't have the capability or the mode 7 to like make the sprites do that.
Yeah, so essentially you can, because there's so many, for the most part there are level or like game specific assets that you can't cross over, like the leaf from Mario 3 can't be in Mario U.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, the cape from Mario World can't be in Mario 1. However, enemies are still the same. So the Wiggler that debuted in Mario World can now go in Mario 3, Mario U, and Mario 1. And things like that.
I was hearing you talk about the P-meter and flying, and I'm just wondering, like, if you can change that style mid-game and have, like, Mario 1's version of Mario wearing the raccoon suit and flying with the P-meter, like, how do they manage that?
It's just sort of a preset engine. Like, you switch over, and it's, like, a set bunch of things changes, so you can't really, like,
tweak
the engine.
Can you change the style while you're playing, or is it just while you're editing?
Pretty sure it's only while you're editing, right?
Okay, that would...
You can change styles while editing, but you can't... That's one of my complaints, is that you can't... One thing I really wanted to do was have Mario 1 start, and then go down a pipe... And then out comes a Mario 3 level. I wish that wasn't that. I was thinking about that.
It would make a hell of a fun ghost house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where everything is like slightly different but the same in every room in weird ways.
And so you just have to use the different mechanics that that Mario can do to get out of like the same situation in
like,
a different
like
way.
Like the subtleties of the jumping physics between each game change every time you go through a new door.
Right.
Yeah.
Like even just having wall jumping.
That would be wacky.
Mario U.
Wacky, wacky. Yeah. Matt, what you been up to?
Oh my gosh. I guess it's not well all right, I have to explain something that's not video game related. Is that allowed, Jimmy? Is that allowed?
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
The master has spoken.
You guys have rules here? What is this?
No, I don't know why I'm getting roasted right now. Go ahead.
It's because he says the video game podcast, so only video game related stuff. All right. So before my hard drives broke, but last week while I was editing and stuff, my power supply just cut out.
Oh, great.
It started shutting down when I rendered and played anything. I was just like, okay. So I had to take a break from playing Fallout 2 until I got that fixed. So I finally, when I came back to my computer to actually play some games, I didn't get a chance to play many. So I'm still on Fallout 2. I finished it, though. I guess the final thoughts on final... any of you guys played the Fallout, like, before 3?
No, only 3 onward for me.
I'm an old school, legit real Fallout fan.
OG.
Yeah,
okay.
Fogout.
Part 2... Well, Part 2 is, like, a better version of Part 1. Mm-hmm. And
it's the same
in
thing
every
almost.
Way.
They just
it
built
is
a
the
better,
same thing.
A better
like
game
the same mechanics.
It. Same
yeah.
tech, same graphics, same engine.
There are some things like I didn't even notice that they fixed. You know what would happen when you have followers, companions with you? They would they run around with you and they do body block. So they can, when you're trying to get out a door, they'll stand by the door and just wait. And sometimes you get stuck in a corner just because you went to go, like, loot a locker, and all of a sudden they're, like, standing near, like, the rubble, and you can't move any farther. You can't move them out the way. Then I saw that you can right-click, hold right-click, move to the side, and you can push them out the way. I didn't know that until the end of the game. Like, this game does not tell you anything. It's so brutal. I mean, I kind of like it in a way, but it kind of just... It's a little frustrating at times because you're like looking for that one guy in this town, like, oh, he's on Second Street, and you're like, what? You mean the whole map? I have to go to every single like person and click, say what's up. But the good thing is that like the people that you talk to is very, it's a good story. The dialogue is amazing in this game. It makes me think, did I enjoy the later Part 3 and up as much as I enjoyed Part 2?
Because, you know, Part 2 gets into the, like, philosophy shit.
Yes. It gets deep.
Which Fallout 3, I know, doesn't necessarily, kind of skims back on. But this is why old-time fans really like Fallout New Vegas, is because much like Fallout 2, it's using the same tech and engine and assets from the previous established game. However, it steps up the writing quality considerably. Like, there's a very interesting parallel between Fallout 2 and New Vegas in so many fun ways. And also, I want to just, like, thought experiment. Is it more immersive trying to find an important NPC by asking around a bunch of NPCs in a crowd versus having them more clearly marked out for you?
It's, I don't know.
In a top-down RPG like Fallout.
I'm not really sure what my answer would be.
I would have to say it's definitely finding them in the crowd. Like, the stuff... It proved to me that it was worth my time to talk to these people. Like, they've almost forced you to, but it, you actually get something out of it, which is the weirdest feeling. You're like, oh my gosh, now I have to, like, click every person. But then you, like, figure out, like, this person's troubles, and maybe you get a quest out of it that got some really good loot or something really amazing happens. And you're like, what? I would have totally missed this if I didn't click around. You know, unless you're using a guide, this is the way you find stuff. It's a little realistic in a sense.
Like they kind of intend for that. And I think it's a little bit satisfying. It's definitely more time consuming. But definitely. I mean, back in the day, this was supposed to be like the one game or the second. Sorry, the second game you bought like that year. Like this was built for a much less saturated video game market. And so they, I guess, kind of expected more of a time commitment out of per individual consumer. And so I noticed when I played The Witcher, I ended up enjoying myself a lot more when I turned the minimap off because I got a lot of the similar sensations. Like it was so fun. Matt will know what I'm talking about here. The Skellige Isles. Is full of these Vikings who love to party, and they throw giant banquets that in the game are actually populated by like 30 NPCs, 40, maybe even 50 will be all in a room together, and your mission objective will be to like talk to the leader of this band of Vikings at a feast. And when you have your minimap turned on, they just have him marked for you. You can walk straight to him. I loved how when I had my minimap turned off, I had to actually like walk through the crowd, mingle, ask around to find out which one was the head honcho at this big feast table. And it felt really good doing that. Huh. Like it was like a bit of mental work that got me where I needed to go that ended up getting me a reward in the process. It was delectable.
Now, obviously, this should be an option for people who don't have the time to go in. And especially if you're reviewing something, this is very time consuming.
I'm sitting there like, I'm running. I need to finish this today. Damn it. And I don't want to keep clicking around.
I'm totes fine with The Witcher 3 and its huge ass HUD option screen, because you can like take off each individual bit and have it just as stupid as you want it. And I was having the time of my life.
Yeah, I gotta try that out, especially on hard mode and the new DLC and all that.
Right. Yeah. Oh, God, I've never looked forward to a DLC in years. Right. Not since Fallout New Vegas, but holy shit, Pillars of Eternity and The Witcher 3 are gonna have, they're not calling them DLC, they're calling them expansions. And even if they are just like Fallout New Vegas styled, like 5 to 7 hour adventures in a one-off map that you don't come back to, I'm still excited about that.
Yeah, that concept was really hit and miss with Fallout 3's DLC expansions. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you played any or many of those.
Yeah. I've done them all. Yeah. I think my favorite one was the one where you go to the swamp.
Oh, dang, I don't remember what it was called. I know exactly what you're talking about, though.
Lookout, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. I really did not like Operation
Anchorage,
whatever the fuck. Operation Anchorage.
Yeah.
I thought that was a lazy DLC.
There's like a divide between the ones that are just kind of a A to B linear tunnel crawl and the ones that actually put you in a new miniature sandbox, just like the original game, but smaller and thematic.
Right. Like the pit was more like that.
Right.
That miniature sandbox. But like Anchorage was literally like, you don't even go to a new place. You sit in a virtual reality thing.
And you reenact. Like,
you pretend to be in a war that happened. And then when you finish that, there's a little vault that opens up next to it that gives you all of the weapons that you got to use in there. And then the guy's like, no, we want them. And then you have all the weapons, so you kill the guy. And that's it. And it was like, at least I got the Gauss Cannon, which was like the best weapon in Fallout 3 was that Gauss Cannon you get from Anchorage. But I don't know. It just seemed lazy to me. I hope they don't.
We'll see. I mean,
fuck it up.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to buy them before the reviews come out,
right?
Because that's just responsible consumer behavior. What? What are you guys laughing at?
No, it's true.
Yeah,
that's that.
Yeah.
That is. And that's the thing nowadays, that people don't realize how important the value of a dollar is. Like, for, you know, for $7.99 a month, that's Netflix or something. For for $4.99, that could be, like, tomorrow's lunch. Like, people just kind of throw things in the air, like, oh, DLC, there you go. Enjoy it. Yeah. It's good for you.
Yeah.
So,
pretty silly.
Very, very quickly before we get into the news, I wanted to very, very briefly talk about Megaman. Megaman Leggins.
Megaman.
Oh, Megaman Leggins.
Yeah, that one.
Leggins. I know that one quite well.
Megaman Leggins.
Megaman Leggins.
I was when I finished my review last night of Megaman Legumes. I watched Gerard's video, so I know you might still have some fresh memories of this game on your mind. Do you, for viewers who don't get the joke, we're talking about Mega Man Legends. Do you remember a guy in Mega Man Legends who is standing in a field fairly early on in the game by himself? You walk up to him and press the talk button, and he says, "What do you think?" And then it gives you a yes or no button prompt. Do you remember that?
I don't. Now I want to go look it up.
I was talking with a friend of mine last night who didn't remember this guy either, but I thought it was the funniest thing I have seen in, like, months when I found this guy. This just like, bad Japanese translation man who just, like, walks up to you in the middle of the woods and says, "What do you think?" And you have a yes or no response box. And it's just like nothing. There's no cutscene introducing what he's talking about. There's nothing weird around him. He's just in a field, a happy green field with some trees and some birds. And he just says, "What do you think?"
Does anything come of it? Is that it? Just like nothing else happens?
No, like you can say yes or no and he'll talk about it's when the tanks are attacking the hole in the ground boss. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
You can find an NPC in the woods before them, and I think if you say yes, he says, "Oh, I sure do hope you have it in you to take on these pirates." And if you say no, he'll be like, "Yeah, I don't know. They're really scary pirates," or something of that matter. It seems like what had happened is whoever was in charge of localization or like implementing the dialogue lines for this one NPC in particular somehow forgot to have the line he's supposed to say before "What do you think?" So he just straight up says, "What do you think?" And you either say yes or no.
Oh my
and this
God.
Is a
Pretty
joke
great.
That I had in my review. I don't oftentimes have jokes, but I kept referencing this thing as a gag, right? And I'm fine with that. I'm okay. But okay, like you guys might be able to explain to me, like, where the hell did this? How did I become an angry, cynical reviewer? I'm looking through the comments of some of these, and there's one I think on Slash R Games that said, "Wow, videos like this are just 10 minutes of George complaining." And I'm like, no, I made jokes. I found funny things in the game and referenced them.
So, George, I have to ask, George, I started watching your video this morning and then I had to get in the car to come to work. Did you like Mega Man Legends?
I thought it was, like, okay. I mean, I didn't really, like, hate it or love it that much, but it just seemed like, I don't know, like, an enjoyable but not necessarily, like, excellent 7 on 10. I really, really enjoyed the world, the characters. I think we were talking before the podcast was recording about how cool the Bonds are.
Yeah.
Those guys are freaking rad. And
the Bond family.
Right. And it like, I actually really want to play the Misadventures of Tron Bond now.
Yeah. It's now on PSN, which before, if you wanted to get it, it would cost you like $300.
Wow.
Because it was a rare game.
They didn't make the greatest hits edition like they did with Legends.
They sure didn't.
Oh, what about Legends 2? I was looking up some videos of that, and you have a lock-on button that you can move with.
Legends 2 is, mechanic-wise, is infinitely better. I've played the game. I haven't, like, really jumped into the story yet. Because I recently just got a copy about 9-10 months ago. But it's supposedly, the gameplay-wise, infinitely better than Mega Man Legends.
I could easily imagine that, because I loaded up a very quick video. I didn't want to spoil too much, but I saw Mega Man lock onto something and then, like, strafe around it. And Mega Man Legends, you can't move while you lock onto things, which is a huge problem for flying and moving enemies, because while you're locking on, you're kind of relying on what the game decides the lock-on's going to be, which doesn't usually aim... Or, I mean, head the target properly, because Mega Man fires slow projectiles. You have to lead the target. and the lock-on button doesn't let you do that once you press it. And also flying enemies that are, like, walking or not walking, that are flying around you. You can't really counter their movements because you're planted on firmly on the ground and have to turn into a turret. It's just, like, weird. A whole bunch of weird early 3D quirks like that, I think, really kept me from enjoying it as much as, of course, I would have if I actually played in 1997. But, I mean, still, like, the world holds up. Like, the cutscenes are still really fun to watch.
Yeah, they're a bit campy, but there's...
Which is so good.
It's like watching the Power Rangers again. You can sit down and watch the Power Rangers and just have a good laugh, entertaining time, because it's like, we have to get into the Megazord now! Like, it's that kind of... like pre-notion of it's definitely aware that it's campy, but it just embraces it, as opposed to like Mega Man 7 or Mega Man 8, where it's like, we have to stop Dr. Wily, where they try to actually just do it seriously.
It's more honest.
Yeah.
And that's what I enjoyed about it. And what might, I guess, end up aging better than all the, because it's like it's pretty janky nowadays.
Oh yeah,
I think
with all the red ash stuff, like
that's why I was playing it, actually, is to get up to snuff on red ash.
When I saw the red ash Kickstarter and I got the code to play the game for the extreme alpha that it was in, I got excited for the idea of a Mega Man Legends kind of recreation, rebirth, if you want to call it. But
ooh, gross, that makes me think of Sonic Dream Collection.
But after playing it, after like really seeing it and experiencing it up front, I immediately said, you know, maybe it was a good thing that Inafune left Capcom. Like, I was in the sense of like, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I got this feeling of I don't want to see a Mega Man Legends 3 game. Dang. At least not with him, because
what a fall from grace.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's a shame. I think. The Kickstarter was a bad idea so early on. He needed to wait until My Number 9 came out to determine the success of it. And I'm sure if he wasn't so focused on expanding so quickly, the money made from My Number 9 would fuel the money for a Red Ash game.
And it would also just increase consumer confidence. Like, no one knows if he's really good for it yet because he hasn't passed the test yet. Like, Mighty Number 9 is not out. It won't be out for a while. Maybe he should have held off on the next Mega Man reboot Kickstarter game until after that.
Yeah.
Well, I think, and this is just the essence of what Kickstarter is, right? People don't understand the consequences of after you've raised money. So if you've raised money for a Kickstarter game, you have to spend all of the money by the end of the year, or else you're going to get taxed to living hell for it. And the taxes that come out of the Kickstarter are so massive.
Because then you have business expenses for
absolutely.
That year. Right.
So
that makes sense.
It almost becomes like a Ponzi scheme where it's like we have to funnel the money. We have to get rid of the money or else the government's going to take it from us right away. And so that's why anyone who starts a Kickstarter at the end of the year is flat out stupid. Just like you should never start a Kickstarter in the month of December. You need to do it right in January, right in February, right in March, and then maybe later on in the year if you have enough time. But you need to give yourself enough time to spend your money, because if you don't spend it, you're going to get taxed hardcore. And a part of me thinks that when Mighty No. 9 got funded and the amount of money they raised from it, they probably had too much money left over. And they didn't spend it all enough right away, so they probably got taxed a crap ton, which is what probably led to them trying to make up for costs or for whatever reason, because Inafune is Inafune and his team of people are helping run things for better or for worse. But that's definitely a reason as to why when you start a Kickstarter game and it's funded, you want to spend that money as soon as possible or you're in for a world of hurt.
Damn.
That's actually really good insight. Never having like crowdfunded anything or managed a large amount of money, I completely would never have thought that like year-end taxes would be something for these campaigns to be keeping track of, but it makes so much sense.
Yeah, because technically it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
Like the guy who did the Kickstarter for the potato salad, like that was a joke, right? But remember how he was like, I'm going to kickstart a potato salad, and if we raise money, I will send everyone a bite of potato salad. I'm sure that dude made a lot of money from that and is seriously fulfilling the rewards of the potato salad. But he, for the amount of money he raised, he better hope to have had a budget to produce a factory farm base of potato salad, because how are you going to get rid of all that money before the end of the year? It's impossible. Right. You have to really, like, be proactive about how to spend a budget on potato salad.
Sending everyone a bite of potato salad is actually sounds like one of the most expensive reward goals you could think of.
I mean, maybe in that case, maybe it does pay for itself, so he's fine. Like, if someone's from Sweden and they bought a bite of potato salad from the States, that would make sense.
You have, like, a $30 shipping fee for a dollar of potato salad.
I mean... But it also has to be a refrigerated shipping, right?
Exactly. Oh, so they have to pay premium to make sure that it's in the container that doesn't go cold or bad or anything in its, God knows, like 5 or 6 day journey to get from the United States to Sweden.
Suddenly doesn't sound like such a great idea.
Yeah.
I just imagined this like sci-fi movie-esque like cryo tank containing exactly one spoon of potato salad in it. Being like transported by two guys with sunglasses and little earpieces in black suits. That's a world I want to live in.
Speaking of good ideas that turned out to be bad ideas that got mishandled by two people who ended up having more than they could chew off of.
Right.
We're going to talk about Twitch Plays Dark Souls shortly after this break.
11 world-class contenders. Take them down with your controller, beat them all, and you've got a shot at Tyson's title. Power! But for that, you've got to beat Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out from Nintendo. Now you're playing with power.
Hey man, I'm Mike Tyson. Really, subscribe to my YouTube channel to see more great videos.
Hello and welcome back to the TOVG podcast, where we are taking our time to edit and correct mistakes and spend a couple days polishing up, making sure things are right, rather than broadcasting things live as they happen, which would thus include many, many mistakes, player-driven errors, if you will. streaming this thing is not necessarily our cup of tea, but there's nothing wrong with that. On the other hand, there's this thing going around called Twitch Plays Dark Souls. Have you guys heard of Twitch Plays Dark Souls?
I heard but not watched until just now.
Watched about an hour the first day.
Oh wow! So got in and out. I haven't watched a straight hour of this, so I don't know what that must look like. But
I mean, I didn't just like sit there, you know, with a little bag of popcorn just like glued to the screen,
you
know, edge of my
seat. Wipe off your schedule so you can watch this guy run into a wall for an hour.
Oh man.
The
entire first 24 hours of Twitch Plays Dark Souls consisted of them getting to that first little training section in the asylum where there's a guy with a bow and arrow at the end of a hallway. Mm-hmm. And you have to, like, duck into a room and then run out and duck into his side and then roll and go up and beat the crap out of him. They could not. They could not. They just couldn't. They couldn't fucking do it.
When I first watched it, before they managed to do that and equip their armor, they had actually gone into the options menu and exited the game.
Yeah.
Did they really?
Yeah.
They fucked up so many ways. One of the times they did get past that archer and it was like a big deal, and then they immediately used a dark sign. And
did they get invaded and someone killed them?
No,
it warps you back
to the previous bonfire.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And the bonfire was right at the bottom of that hill before the fucking archer. So they were just like, "We did it," and then they just warped back to the start and then like, oh no.
That dark sign became a real problem.
Yeah.
So did the options menu. I've seen them rebind the keys a couple times, which just like screws everything up. So what ended up happening, for viewers who don't know, Matt's got something.
No, I was just going to ask, how is this done? Because I see it freezing every couple seconds.
That's part of the algorithm.
Part of the story as it developed. Twitch Plays Dark Souls is a thing that exists. You might have joked about it. You might have thought at night about this thing happening. They went and did it. They had a terrible idea. And went and made a terrible thing out of it. And it basically worked off of straight Twitch Plays Pokemon rules for the first part in the beginning, where they put in their inputs. They had a good, like, 20 or 30 seconds of delay, and it was just like a clusterfuck of inputs in the first place, so nothing was getting done very quickly. They ended up getting stuck in the pool of the Undead Asylum, like, literally... What should take a normal player like 15 seconds to reach after starting the game. After about 2 days, they reached this place and got stuck for 3 more days until last night, which would have been Wednesday the 19th, in which they implemented what Matt was talking about, where the streamer has cheat engine set to automatically pause the game every few seconds while the chat votes on the character's next move.
Yeah.
Which makes it possible... But a little, it kind of spoils it in a weird way.
It's not nearly as exciting, and it was a 45-minute process to fight the Asylum Demon.
Yeah,
like
you can't.
One 45-minute fight.
It's going to make the game take a really long time. Like, compound how long it would take Twitch to play Dark Souls in real time, give that a few seconds of input delay, and then... make that thing pause every few seconds, and you have something that might legitimately take years.
Well, they turned it off after the Asylum Demon.
Oh, that's right, because they can vote on how long the delay is.
Yeah, see, here's the interesting thing about this system. This guy, or whoever the person and or team is behind Twitch Plays Dark Souls, I think they had all this stuff ready just in case, but they wanted to see how it would go just raw first, and... there are like 4 different systems that have a continuous voting on which one. So it's like there's the democracy anarchy thing, which we saw on Twitch Plays Pokemon a while ago, where one of them is anarchy is every input gets sent through the thing, and whichever ones it receives in the frames that it receives them, it does, which gets, you know, the walking in every direction and doing crazy shit and, you know, whatever. And the other one is democracy, where it does an action and then it waits a few seconds while the votes of how many actions are being tallied. So, like, if a whole bunch of people say roll forward and one guy says turn left, then roll forward will be taken, and then it goes. But you could also vote anarchy or democracy to change which one it is, and there's, like, a slider, and when you get to a certain part of the slider, it changes which one. And then there's an auto walk versus set number of steps thing that you can vote between. There's a delay vote, and there's so much going on with that. It's like a calculus problem going on
like
screen.
There are 3 sliders moving in real time at the same time, as well as an input box of votes being tallied in real time. It's a little bit of a clusterfuck.
It's definitely a clusterfuck, but I mean, they beat the Asylum Demon, so.
I have to say, just to chime in real quick, I am impressed that they have. I was watching a replay of it today because I think Dev posted it on Twitter. They have like a whole donation system going. Like, I think people.
Oh yeah, yeah, they do.
Yeah, like
donated
it's so fast.
Inputs get like preferential priority or something.
That's I don't know, but that's what I'm saying. Like that's a weird way to look at the pay to play model, I guess.
Pay to play.
Pay to watch Twitch play.
No, it's pay to play, but it's like putting in a quarter and then hitting like the punch button on a Street Fighter arcade. And then the next guy has to throw in a quarter and hit you know,
right,
the quarter circle.
And then whoever votes the most gets the command they picked.
Yeah.
Well, one guy's like, we should Hadouken. The other guy's like, no, we need to open up the options menu and exit to desktop.
I just watched 5 minutes of a guy falling, and it keeps freezing over and over again.
Oh, no. Does it freeze in the middle of the falling animation?
Yes.
Oh, dear.
I
well, they can't even do anything
falling
while they're falling.
Right, and they're just like entering commands. They're putting up the delay. I don't know what the delay does because it goes up and it's still like every 2 seconds it freezes.
I think
and I'm like, just let him die, please.
I think that delay correlates to how often it freezes. Because like they were not able to play this game until they implemented the freeze democracy, delayed democracy. I don't know what do they have a word for the system?
Anarchy and something.
Well, with Twitch Plays Pokemon, they didn't really need it because it was a turn-based game to begin with. They had to turn Dark Souls into a turn-based game to make it work in this format, which is hilarious.
That's so weird.
It is. Yeah, it's a really weird everything about, like, I feel like the novelty has already worn off as far as I'm concerned.
Twitch Plays Pokemon is just nuts now.
Oh yeah, Twitch Plays Pokemon I like that they didn't just like keep running the game over and over again. They're doing like different things every time. It's pretty cool. But I don't know. I feel like with all these systems implemented, it takes away the whole reason why this would have been crazy is if a bunch of people yelling like roll attack roll and like it just like actually ends up working at some point. But obviously they were never going to beat the fucking Asylum Demon in Anarchy mode, and so it's kind of like this is just to me this is the nail in the coffin that's like Twitch Plays Dark Souls is not possible unless we like resort to a whole bunch
unless
of other modes.
Unless they break Dark Souls, turn it into something else.
And so then I carry on with watching other things.
So speaking of altering classic video games,
what did Konami do this time?
Actually, Konami's okay. It's Capcom who is oftentimes in a lot of trouble, but now they got a lot of praise last week because they decided to remake Resident Evil 2, which a lot of fans have been wanting to do for a while. There is a fan remake of Resident Evil 2 that actually looked pretty decent. It was one of two major projects porting it over to the Unreal Engine 4. I say porting it over, not really. They were remaking it straight from scratch. Did I say that right? I think I said straight from scratch, but whatever.
You're good. I got you.
The team is called Invader Games. They were remaking something called RE2 Reborn, I think.
Reborn. Yeah, it's Reborn.
Okay, Resident Evil 2 Reborn, and
I'm gonna butt in for a second to say that this whole RE prefix thing is like I have never played a Resident Evil game, and I'm already sick of hearing the like ooh reloaded remake like
remixed
oh god I can't wait for the I can't wait for the Resident Evil
my heart is
rhythm
breaking.
Rhythm game. Resident Evil Remix, it's a rhythm game.
So okay.
I just had to say that I'm angry.
A fan remix got canceled because Capcom said no. And usually when that happens, they're really sad and angry. But in this case, the development team posted a Facebook update where they sound kind of happy about it in a weird way, where they seem like more hyped that the remake is happening than they are disappointed that their remake had to get canceled. Also because they got invited to Capcom to discuss further ideas. It was a really wishy-washy statement, but they seem hype about it. I don't know if that means they're going to get like hired on the team or if they're going to swap assets or like documentation or something for the real remake.
Maybe Peter Molyneux was there and he's going to change all their lives.
No, too soon. Yeah. Too soon. Yeah. my Molly wound is still open.
Molly wound. Why does that fit so well?
I don't know. That's
there are lots Molly of syllables weird. That fit at the end of Molyneux. Molydukes. Molyduke.
It's new. It's Molyneux. The X is silent.
Yeah, but it's so fun saying it.
Molyneux. Molyneux. Dukes Molly Nukesum.
That would be if they managed to hype that up, it would be the worst and the best. So they say, we're happy Capcom has decided to take the lead of the project and to develop the remake awaited for years by everybody. Nobody could bring back to life the masterpiece of 1998 better than the creators themselves.
At which point, like, the cynical, angry old man in me wants to be like, are you sure, guys? We're talking about the same company that managed to make, like, RE6.
I mean, I think this is one of those situations where nobody can bring back the life of the masterpiece of 1998 better than the creators themselves. Do you know that this is not 1998
and
Capcom?
And most of the team, or most of, like, the big driving forces behind the team are long gone.
Yeah,
it's like, Inafune is making Red Ash, you guys. Come on.
Kamiya's making Dragon Derp.
I mean, like,
Mikami made the evil with it. Sorry.
If the creators themselves are the best for that, then maybe you should go to a company that has those guys and find them. Make them make the game.
Yeah. Have Platinum make RE2. Have Platinum make everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Platinum for president.
I'd vote for that.
Technically, D's Nuts is doing pretty well in that. Mm. What was that, Iowa?
Yeah, yeah.
D's Nuts?
Did you not hear about that?
No.
Oh,
explain,
no,
please.
Hold on, I got this.
Okay, it's all you do.
Okay. All right. Matt, what if I told you that in the state of, is it Iowa or Idaho?
It is Iowa.
Iowa, okay. In the state of Iowa, running at a whopping 9% in the presidential election, the nomination for the candidates in the independent party, is the man, D's Nuts.
hold on. First name D, last name Nuts?
Yeah.
First name D's.
As in D's Nuts.
are they talking about the band? Or?
Hang on.
9%.
First name D's, as in D's Nuts. Last name Nuts, as in D's Nuts.
D's Nuts. Now, it's actually a 15-year-old kid who thought it'd be funny to submit as an independent because there's no independents in that state.
Oh, it's
a
person?
State. It's an actual person.
Oh,
but,
that changes everything.
He's not a real person, but, like, someone, like, he put in the legitimate paperwork and got past all of, like, the hierarchy bullshit. And so they honored him as, like, an actual candidate. And then he made it on the ballot and just for voting and polling.
9%.
And 9% of the state of Iowa is...
I'm looking at it right now. It's the kids from Iowa. The state is North Carolina.
Oh, North Carolina. Okay.
Yeah.
So in that case,
9%.
9% of North Carolina is with D's Nuts. Just saying, 9% is with D's Nuts.
That's quite a claim, sir.
9%. That's a lot of people. That was like, you know what? People who didn't even know what was going on. Ooh, D's Nuts. You know what? I'll vote for that.
It's so funny hearing. I just watched a clip from ABC7 News where the guy's like explaining Hillary Clinton at 38% and Donald Trump in the lead with 40% of the vote. And independent candidate from Iowa named D's Nuts. And he like really pronounced it. Really enunciated. Super good.
So
good joke. Good prank.
So Twitter is telling me right now that it's still trending. 250,000 people are still tweeting about D's Nuts. But the headline that I'm reading here is Warren G endorses D's Nuts for president. The old school rapper Warren G is for D's Nuts.
I am okay with this tangent.
Yeah. Oh, this
are we,
is
are
good.
We, are we calmed down enough to talk about video games?
I'm sorry. Oh. We're good.
Oh, but what kind of a future are we living in where the presidential race is like narrowing down between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and D's Nuts?
real question is, which one is more funny, Donald Trump or D's Nuts? Hey, zing.
Are we going to have to watch out for the Donald Trump Defense Force again, like last week?
Dude.
Hold on.
Does he actually have one?
Yeah. Great.
Jimmy, did the Donald Trump Defense Force actually like get mad at you last week?
For what?
I remember you made some disparaging remarks about Donald Trump. I remember.
When, in the podcast?
Yeah. Have you already forgotten?
I mean, I generally I think it generally just don't like him, so it's not like an extremely uncommon thing
but it's
for
like,
me to say something. But
are there people on the internet who will really like defend video games?
Yeah, I did not receive any angry comments about Donald Trump. So
maybe we don't have to be careful when treading around Trump. Okay, so we got a few minutes left.
Let's just cover a story or two. Go.
PT inspired Allison Road is going to be launching a Kickstarter.
All right.
That's
not very surprising.
It's something that I kind of want to keep an eye on. It's a game made by a guy who does CGI in Hollywood movies. He's an environment and concept artist. Maybe not even CGI, maybe regular A. he has a minor staff he's going to be paying to make a game inspired by PT, except it'll be a full game. And I'm like, yay.
Yeah. Did you watch any playthroughs of Allison Road? Or any of the commentaries over there, because it's just like
they didn't release an actual screenshots.
Demo. Okay. Allison Road itself, because as far as I know, the trailer is just somebody playing a like PT style mini house of like a horror experience with more of like a promise that it's going to be a lot more than just that house, that it's going to be bigger. And there's no indication that that's even part of the game. It might just be a vignette on its own. But I watched Jim Sterling play through it, and it legit, like, it's not PT, obviously. But I only say that because it's horizontally different from PT, as opposed to being like lesser or more. It seems like it's going to be very good. And it is just sort of a different vibe. Like, the main character has a bit of voice acting that he does that's, like, in his head is like, oh, man, like, my head hurts or whatever. You know, like, obviously the dialogue is not that. But it's like, you'll walk into a room and he'll be like, oh, where are the pills? Or something like that. And it's like, okay, like, looking for Advil or whatever because I got a headache. And then, like, the only thing I didn't like about the Allison Road preview was that they just flat out show a monster.
Yeah, we already know that there's like some bloody girl ghost.
Yeah, but like they just flat out like show it at one point. Like the reveal of it was very good because he like looks around the corner and then it's walking down this like 10-foot hallway that is what the house is. So it's like, oh god, I'm stuck in here. But like at the end, they just straight up like show it full frontal as it walks. And it's like, I would have preferred not to know. It would have been much more creepy if I didn't know. I hope that that's not like the main bad guy because it's kind of a little spoiling.
And they pass around screenshots of this ghost like nobody's business.
Right.
Real quick, before we move on, did you guys hear about the playthrough last week of PT?
No.
What do you mean?
They were saying that Jesse Cox was telling me that someone posted a video online of them walking through the halls of PT in reverse.
Uh-huh.
Like with their back facing and they're playing. And like you can actually hear a lot more of the conversations and the ghost would freak out and never attack you because it'd have a hard time spawning and doing things.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, it opened up a bit more, like, to the story elements because you could go in reverse and, like, not prompt anything correctly. Just having your back facing the ghost the whole time.
Yeah, I did see that. And there's, like, an argument over whether or not it's legit or if you're just, like, seeing it load in.
Yeah, like it's there's a bunch of arguments that, like, oh, it's the game's just glitching or it's intentional.
Like, they didn't test for that versus did they actually plan for that?
Yeah.
So really, really quick, speed through like stories. Is the Uncharted, the Nathan Drake collection is going to get an easy mode and a hard mode. There'll be extras. You also get a photo mode. Any thoughts, opinions, comments?
Cool.
I don't play Uncharted.
Taking photos in-game is a weird thing, but okay.
Wind Waker. It works in Last of Us really well, be the same system because it's the same company. I'm down for it.
Might as well be the same game.
Oh.
I've never played either of them. I have no clue. Just roasting something I know nothing about.
Marcin Awinski has said snooty things about managing The Witcher's free DLC program. He says that I would really like to see such initiatives become an industry standard rather than an exception to the general rule.
Nice.
I mean, I have an opinion about that. I don't know if I have time for it, though.
I don't know. Do we care about The Witcher here? My opinion is roasted.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. So, like, the thing is, The Witcher 3 free DLC program, I think, is kind of like a little bit of a half truth label. Like, they're releasing a lot of stuff that obviously couldn't have been done within a week, but they're releasing it within a week. And they were also talking about this plan way back in before the game was launching. Like, they knew about it ahead of time. It just seems like what they're kind of doing is like a sort of Splatoon thing, where they're trickling out content that could have been ready beforehand, but having it out for free to kind of not necessarily maybe like keep the it doesn't feel bad because the game's already fine without it, but it does have an ulterior motive to sell games, keep people talking about it, keep players playing it, and also win over, like, it's a hearts and minds strategy. They can have all these things ready to go and then call it free DLC, and suddenly what they could have just thrown into a patch sounds like they're giving you a free extra bonus thing.
It's the same thing Splatoon is doing.
Right, right.
And in my opinion, I don't have any problem with it.
It's weird because it's like fine, but at the same time, I don't know if like it's like applicable for the rest of the industry. Like this guy's quotes seem to think it is. Like, I couldn't imagine this working with, let's say, The Last of Us.
I mean, like, did The Last of Us have DLC?
It had DLC for the garbage multiplayer mode no one played. Well, actually, the multiplayer is not that bad. It just became garbage after they introduced the DLC shit. It started to turn into a pay-to-win system.
Ooh.
I mean, like, I don't know. This is sort of the same thing that, like, MOBAs have been doing, you know?
Well,
though
also,
you don't really have to pay up front for most MOBAs, but it's like, I don't know, you get stuff on a continual basis, and these are already games that are big. And so, like,
yeah,
I don't know. In my opinion, I like this system for games like The Witcher and Splatoon, and there might be a bunch more games out there that can do this, because, like, in Splatoon, if I would have had every single gun and map that I have right now when the game launched, then I would have, because I would have been overwhelmed, and so I would have latched onto one thing, mm-hmm. played only that, and ignored everything else. But, like, because I had, like, you know, five guns at the start because I was only, you know, a few levels in when they released the first DLC, and that added like one or two at my level cap. And then I like leveled up and I got into like, okay, now I have 15 guns, and I started like using them all differently. And then they added another map, and like, oh, I gotta try all the guns I like on that map now. And then like they added more guns, like, God, I gotta find new guns to like. And it kept me coming back again and again, and it made me get accustomed to everything. Like, I didn't just dive headfirst into the pool. I, like, put my toes in and then, like, put my legs over the side, kick my feet a little bit.
I guess, like, my general opinion is, like, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I just want to make sure that people are, like, aware of what they're doing. Like, they're not necessarily releasing this stuff out of the kindness and goodness of their hearts. It's very much part of the strategy of selling these games.
So Guild Wars 2 did something similar with and some MMOs have started doing this after Guild Wars 2, where they release something. Well, I guess Guild Wars 2 wasn't the first one to do it, but they WildStar started doing it after as well, where they release something like every 2 weeks or so to keep people enticed. But what end up happening is when they first started doing this thing called the Living World, as they called it, it wasn't good enough to hold people's attention for that week. So what people would do is just kind of wait, and if it wasn't good enough, they just stopped playing and didn't care that every week there was some type of DLC or some type of Living World. But I guess that's another way to think about it. So as long as the DLC is good, every week you'll probably keep people coming back to it, or they'll just wait and download it all that one time.
Were they charging for it?
No, this is free.
Okay. But yeah, which is like, fine, but it also depends on how much is already in the game to begin with. Like, I don't think this could work for small games at all. Just either, like, games that feel robust and feature complete to begin with. Like, a cinematic 6 to 8 hour adventure. I don't know if that would really work out like that.
So people are still playing it and still haven't beat it because they want to finish every little thing in the game. And, you know, they come home from work and they play The Witcher, and that's, like, their game for the next 2 months.
But then you don't...
free DLC.
You don't play all games like that, though. There are a lot of games that are just meant to be burnt through in a weekend or even an evening.
Right. And you skip everything.
Yeah.
It depends on the person, I guess.
I mean, there's just, like, not as much to see in the first place in a lot of games. Like, I couldn't even imagine this working for, like, Half-Life.
I mean, I don't know how it would. Oh, do you mean, like, Half-Life 2 comes out and then episodes 1 and 2 is released
no,
as like free
episodes,
DLC.
It's just like alternate costumes for characters. Like, in, that's what it is for The Witcher. It's like some extra quests, which are nice, and some extra costumes that are just like nothing.
I don't know. I think we can move on from this.
There's another minor controversy about the mod tools they've released for The Witcher 3, which is like another weird thing where it's like, you know, you can't really complain that they're giving out mod tools, but at the same time, it doesn't really, I don't know, meet the standards of what they were promising before, which is like another. Okay, so they've released mod kits earlier before launch. They were promising a red kit, which is supposed to be like an engine specific game building tool where players could make entire new areas and quests out of it. The mod kit they ended up releasing allows players to replace and edit assets, not necessarily create new quests and areas. They can edit scripts, textures, hopefully sounds, because I want to change out the music when you go sailing. It's just a little less powerful and usable than some promises they were making before launch. There's actually some quotes I dug up where the same guy who was talking about the DLC, Owinski, says, for Witcher 2, we released it quite late, it referring to the red kit. For Witcher 3, it will be faster. There will be an editor. And now, in August, a couple days ago, he says, the modding tools we are releasing are not an editor. So you don't necessarily have a level editor so much as, I guess, what you would have is file extraction tools.
Right.
Which, you know, it's like, I'm fine. I just can't really, like, complain about getting stuff, right?
Right.
But at the same time,
I want to input on this. Well, I mean, kind of a side note, but it reminded me of a thing that people learned about today.
Actually,
never mind. It's Mario Maker stuff, so I don't know if I'm technically allowed to talk about it.
Does it have to do with the Amiibo costumes?
No. It has to do with a thing that allows some very liberal user input for certain stuff, but
can you make dick levels?
Oh, are you talking about the ranking system?
No. Let's just move
type
on.
Type it to me, Jimmy. Type it. Now I'm curious.
Okay. I'll type it in the Skype chat.
We'll talk about it after Mario Maker comes out. after the embargo lifts.
Yeah, I think we can talk about that. That wasn't
okay. That's a really. I don't know what this thing is. Can we talk about it?
Yeah, you can set up custom sound triggers that with like your own sounds in them for the
game.
That's
so fucking cool.
What? Wait,
yeah.
What?
So Polygon did a video on it, actually.
Oh, then okay. We're fine. Right. We're fine.
Then we're fine, yeah.
Yeah, I think Polygon released today, but there's a microphone built into the Wii U, and you can record a sound clip of you being like, hey, let's go, and then you can program it.
That's what people are going to do.
That is so
good. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Polygon in their video, they did like the Tim Allen like, and then there was also, what are those? That was
perfect.
Yeah, so it's a cool feature. The thing about Mario Maker 2, though, just for sound effect, for really asset purposes, is that everything becomes available after each day you play, so it like slowly weans you in on playing Mario Maker. So that's
kind of like what we were just talking about with Witcher and Splatoon.
Yeah,
oh, there we go.
It does take a while to unlock all the content, but yeah, it's pretty tight. Stuff like that's awesome. Go play Mario Maker.
So very, very quickly, extremely fast. Splatoon tournaments are happening in Japan, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay.
So you got $1 million prize pool between 40 events divided between 8 Japanese cities put on by a company called the Kadokawa Dwango Corporation. And the event is called the Splatoon Koshien Esports Series. They are also competing at Puzzle and Dragons. But the Splatoon Cup is $1 million total, I think.
Wow.
That is correct, yes. Wait.
Wow.
Hang on. If I'm hearing this correctly, it is not $1 million grand prize.
It is $1 million.
$1 million spread over 40 separate events. That makes this hold much less weight than it sounds
still
like.
It's something. I mean, they got to start
something,
somewhere.
Granted, yeah. But everyone's like $1 million Splatoon tournament. But like, that's not That's very, very like
not wrong,
out of context.
But at the same
it's
time,
it's so out of context. It's completely out of context.
The big winners between these 40 events are gradually going to consolidate their winnings into something that might be comparable, or at least a very significant portion of that $1 million.
Probably not more significant than maybe 10% of it.
So $100,000 for whoever wins
maybe,
a whole lot?
Maybe, Max. Maybe.
I don't know, man. I mean, I have a feeling like a lot of the lower tier events out of the 40 of them aren't going to have any winnings at all.
Well, it says spread over 40 events, so it's got to be something.
You know, it's also a near 10%.
Chance to move up in the tiers. What's that?
What?
You know, it also is a near 10%.
D's Nuts,
D's Nuts
ranking in North Carolina.
There we go. There we go. That's it. We got a. We're heading out. I have social occasions. Don't want to be late.
One more.
Anything? Okay.
Okay.
Gerard, the completionist. Where can we find your stuff on the YouTubes?
The name of this. Sorry. The name of this podcast, the That One Video Gamer podcast, is actually inspired by my YouTube channel, That One Video Gamer. So
you can also find us all on thatonevideogamer.com.
Yeah, that's where we're at. That's
listen,
where we're
listen to our podcast at That One Video Gamer, the podcast.
Right.
Hell yeah.
So, we're doing the plugs. YouTube.com/bunnyhopshow. Where are you, Matt?
YouTube.com/mattvisualshow.
Where are you, Jimmy?
That's not real.
Matt
That's not real.
Show. God damn.
Matt, do you want to get any sort of traffic from this podcast? You're doing yourself no favors.
I'm in this for the nuts, man. That's what I'm in this for.
Ew, gross.
He's in it for D's nuts.
Yes.
You can find me at youtube.com/sundergamer, or you can support me on Patreon at patreon.com/sunder. And that's me.
Nice.
Follow me on Twitter at SunderCR.
All right, and with that, we will head out. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Raise 5 stars on iTunes. We love you.
Yeah. Love you guys. I love you.
Bush.